Negroes doing Negro stuff.
Holy fuck, man. I guess I should apply the trigger warning here. Trigger fucking warning, goddammit. Shit gets rough. So this shit, man, it's gonna be a lot of personal journal updating. I mean, I tend to do that in general already, right? But, like, for folks that have been around for a long time, like, you remember this, like when I moved in 2013, right? Like, fucking every episode was like a personal journal update. Because fucking moving is some shit. And so now here I am. I'm still in Warrenville. Warren, you know, I'm out here in Illinois. Excuse. And, and yeah, like, so the carpenters quit and been moving stuff in here. And, you know, so like now I actually am at what, it's a dining room table, but fuck that. It's my work table. I can... This is my fucking work table, buddy. Right, so I post up here and record my shit now. And, well, like, we got... You know, there's no love seat or couch yet, so there's just a, one of those, like, lazy person, easy leaning back chairs. You know what I'm talking about? Really thick chair that's like a miniature couch that you can, like, pull the lever and, like, lean back in the motherfucker. But I don't have a setup like that. I pushed it up against the wall so that it's at a 90 degree angle so you can only sit the fuck down in it because I'm really fun. And so there is no leany backy in the leany backy chair. And end tables on either side of it and a couple of lamps, you know, like, it's really starting to look like a small home, right? I guess that's the idea. And then also, interacting with my stepsons more. You can call them whatever you want, you know? Like, they don't really need a title. Like, they're the boys, you know? They're a couple of boys doing boy things and trying to figure it out. And, I have an easy time interacting with a 15-year-old. Other adults do not. And they don't get it. Like, first thing that I realize is that he's 15. He is very close to childhood. He's not that many years away from diapers. Like, he's a very young person. And, but, you know, like, he's being not really raised... But, like, he's growing up in a millionaire's household. His biological father is a millionaire. And so he's like... So, you know, it seems like he's not easy to amuse. But you gotta take things away. You take things... Like, if a person has 100, take away 99 and then show them 5. And they're gonna be like, 5 is the shit right now. All right? And I interact with the 8-year-old, Feeny Loco. Phoenix Kalita has posted about the 8-year-old before. You know, like, he has a, I don't know the levels of autism. I don't know, but, you know, like, he has a little autism and, yeah, it's easy to work around, you know, and I already, like, I don't flip out on kids, you know, like, he has an autism, can be patient. Fuck, be patient with people who don't have autism. Like, you know, fucking be patient, which is easy for me. Yeah, I don't have a tough time with that. Well, like the 15-year-old, right? So, yesterday, I'm recording this Thursday, right? Yesterday, Wednesday. You know, I mean, you know, he's spoiled. You know, and it's not like he's spoiled because his biological father, like, super cares about him and is, like, interacting with him a lot. His biological father is, very disengaged excuse for a parent, a very really bad person for a young person to be around. And and you know, he's very pouty, you know, we're like, we're getting food, you know, he's, I'm not hungry, you know, we have some entertainment. I just, you know, like, when he came here, like, he sat down in the closet, like actually, like, in, like, went where the clothes are hung up and sat on the floor in the closet with his face behind the door. I was like, you have a time? And he came out, he tried to say, like, some slick shit to me, and I was like, you know, I know your whole song and dance, right? Like, I've been your age twice. Like, and I think that's important. Like, establish that with kids. Let them know that you're not taking their shit, but at the same time, calm, be cool. I'm not. I've been here. Like, I'm in my 30s. I've been you 2 times. Like, I...
Father Teresa's Mexican.
And he cut, like, from that sentence forward, he cut a lot of his shit. Right? A lot of his bullshit, he cut that smooth out. Because he got it. Like, he's interacting with an adult that's not gonna take his Linkin Park shit. I mean, really. Like, he was acting like Linkin Park lyrics. He really was. And then from there, he's fucking having a blast just watching DVDs on the laptop. And that's because everything was taken away. Right? There's no Wi-Fi to get on. Your magic cards are not here. So now you're in a position to make the best of it. And my DVDs, I have an ass load, alright? I don't fucking know the number. Just know I have an ass load of DVDs. Like, I could start the pawn shop from this and build up. Like, with my DVDs and Phoenix Kalita's yarn, we could just be like, anybody who wants to knit and watch movies, come shop with us. Right?
Right.
And so I was like, look, the DVDs are in alphabetical order. Think of something and look for it. And I think, I forgot the first one he pulled out. Oh, he pulled out Alien vs. Predator, and he had never seen that before. And he was vibing to it, and then I'm, you know, like, I had been busting my ass working, moving heavy-ass motherfucking dressers from the storage unit, from the upstairs storage unit down the stairs, like, earlier that day, busting ass, man. And then moving them into the apartment, so I'm fucking tired, I'm relaxing. You know, like, he's pausing it and coming in and out of the adult's bedroom. And they know, like, they know they're only allowed to, like, put, like, 2 feet in the adult's bedroom, don't it? I'm just like that. And leaning in and telling me what party's on and whatnot, and then going back in there. And then he posted up and he watched the Batman The Dark Knight. And we had good interactions to where at the end of the evening, he actually turned and made eye contact and said bye and good night. You know, like, and Phoenix Kalita, my fiance, his biological mother, like, she was, like, excited about that. While I'm like, it's what you do. Let kids know that you're not going to take their shit and interact with them. You know, like, he knows that he's the young person and I'm the old person. Yeah, so, I think that's how that works out. Alright, so fucking there's news, there's comment, there's stuff, there's things, there's whatnot, and what have you. Phoenix Kalita sent me, links to stuff. Fallon Matthew from FallonKitty.com, she has a You Caring, fundraiser link up. And I'm gonna go ahead and plop a couple of bucks on there when I get my next check. I'm at that point too, right? Like, I'm at that I need my next check point. Like, it's fucking real. I am at that I need my next check. Yeah, like, that shit should be, jeez, just like last year, you know, clear it up by October. But for now, this August and September, I expect shit to be real. Like, we're gonna be clutching them coins, nigga. Clutching them motherfucking coins. Pinching those pennies. Clocking them quarters. You know, nabbing those nickels. Alright? What, Dolly whopping those dimes. That's not a word. I just said that. Dolly whopping. Get the fuck out of here. Alright, but yeah, if you could hit up Fallon Matthew on the You Caring fundraiser. And that's just the real shit around our circles, man. Like, nigga, we proletariat, nigga. And that's something dope about those fundraisers is that, you know, we kick over to each other each fucking time. Right? Phoenix Kalita puts one up, the homies kick over to it. The homie Fallon Loco. There was one time the homie Fallon Loco didn't have one up, and you know, and Phoenix and I were just like, man, let's throw something over there, cuz, like, that's the homie, cuz, you know, so we're gonna do that. All right, I'm tangenting, riffing. Yeah, Fallon Matthew at the You Caring, and she has it floating around in the social networks. I have the link on my public page, William Joseph Jackson. I don't have it on the William J. Jackson because 30-day bans take 30 days. And it's... Oh, excuse me. So I'm not back on that motherfucker until, like, fucking August 10th or some shit. And I'm recording this July 28th. Alright? Alright. Let's see what the fuck we can do here.
Father Teresa's wine cellar is rated R for keeping it real.
Dangerous heat in the west reaching coast to coast. Tonight, heat advisories are now up in 14 states. In the east, from North Carolina right up to Massachusetts. More than 50 million people in the zone, and that heat has turned deadly. So far this year, 21 children have now died in hot cars. The latest, just yesterday in Dallas, a 2-year-old left in the family van outside their church. The heat firing up severe storms for millions in the Northeast. This lightning hitting the Empire State Building just moments ago.
William said he won't attend my wedding unless I crip walk into my reception.
Oh yeah, you fucking heard that right in that audio clip from that video. Like, yeah, so a 2-year-old boy died after being left inside a sweltering SUV as his parents attended a Bible study at the Rehoboth. I don't know how to pronounce that. The Rehoboth Praise Assembly in Dallas, Texas on July 24th. Yeah, well, at the church, the children and the adults break into separate groups. When the Burmese family was reunited after about 45 minutes, the parents realized that Boyle Sang, the youngest of their 5 kids, was missing. Fox 4 reported, the father discovered his toddler unresponsive in their 2006 Honda Pilot. Okay, let's just hold up there. So these folks are Asian. Right, and so of course we dance it back to, what was that, gorilla, Harambe, the gorilla and the little boy, and you know, black parents scrutinized, you know, bring up criminal history of the guy who's not even the biological father, this, that, and the other. You know, some of the white homies come out and they're like, hey, cuz, you know, like, nigga, I forgot my motherfucking kids sometimes, nigga. Like, cuz, you know, that's how the white homies talk. In my head, that's what I hear. And, you know, then, you know, the white folks with the alligator, you know, and it was, like, most of the coverage of the alligator story was comparing it to the gorilla story because they happened so close to each other. And, This one won't get much traction because it doesn't look good on Christians in the South. And also Asians are the model minority, right? Like that's like that next step from European. I mean, fuck, the continents are right there to where the point of where when I was in elementary school, they started teaching us to call it Eurasia as opposed to just Europe and or Asia, just Eurasia. Yeah, you know, so they're the model minority. They will not catch hardcore scrutiny for this. This story will not... Is this ableist to say a story doesn't have legs? Or maybe that's just vernacular. That's just news talk vernacular. Fuck, I don't know. Might be ableist. And fucking... Yeah, this story will get no traction. If this story doesn't have legs, it'll go fucking nowhere. But you hear it here. So for Jesus, pro-life. 2-year-old boy had to die. Now, continuing forward, the father discovered his toddler unresponsive in their 2006 Honda Pilot and rushed him inside. It is not known how long he was trapped as temperatures soared to 100 degrees. Quote, he was very... He looked bad, end quote, said a church member, Rang Om, who told CBS DFW, said, quote, he was grabbing his kid, and the kid would not move, end quote. He had already passed away. Quote, the child was transported to the local hospital where the child was pronounced deceased, end quote, from the police spokesman, Carlos Almeida. As he told us, CBS News police said this remains an active investigation. The fuck you gotta act, nigga? It was hot. They left that little nigga in the car for Jesus. And he dead now. The fuck you investigating? He fucked up. Alright, nigga was chasing them blessings and left the kid behind. Nigga was playing Pokemon with blessings, trying to catch them all. Now, let's see, his name, Boyle Sang, is the 21st child to die in a hot car this year in the U.S., according to kidsandcars.org. Earlier this month, on July 22nd, Samari Matya, a 4-year-old from Pennsylvania, died after her babysitter left her in a vehicle for hours during a heat wave in June. A Texas dad who left his 6-month-old daughter in the car for 4 hours tried to revive the infant by placing her in the fridge. What the fuck? That, like, nigga, I get the panic, nigga. Like, you bugging, like, y'all fucked up. Y'all fucking killed my kid, nigga. Like, but what that? In the fridge. Air don't circulate in the fridge, nigga. Alright, he was charged with manslaughter. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says that heat stroke in vehiculars is the leading cause of all non-crash related deaths involving children 14 and younger. God damn, nigga, who? I want to know the stories about the ones who are between the ages of 11 and 14. Even 10 to 14. The ones that are between the ages of 10 to 14, I want to know those stories. I might have to start Google find. Because I want to know. Because one reason I want to know is I want to know if they had like learning disabilities or anything like that. You know, because I think at the age of, I mean, unless they have like child locks on. Because, like, when you're 13, 14, 12, you just open the door and get out. Like, what the fuck? It's hot. This is bullshit. But then again, I guess I was a different 12-year-old, right? Yeah, like, this shit was a little ill back then. Fuck, I don't know. I don't know. I can't call this.
The news is a shit show these days. And we're here to give you a break from the white supremacist media bullshit by bringing you the shitty news so that you can feel less like shit because you know the people discussing all the fucked up shit give a shit about you and the shitty situations you deal with every day. So shit. Pour yourself a glass and settle in for Father Teresa's Wine Cellar.
A local school bus driver has been charged with raping one of the students on his bus. The 15-year-old Sail Creek Middle High School student was reported missing around 9:30 Wednesday night, but was seen boarding the bus. The girl told deputies she rode the bus until it was returned to where it was kept. Then she got into the car of the bus driver, 34-year-old Alexander Rodriguez, and he took her to a Super 8 motel in Ootowah. The teen says he rented a room and forced her to perform oral sex and raped her. According to an affidavit, she repeatedly told him no and that she was in pain. He allegedly responded that he was trying to make it hurt. That night, he drove her part of the way home and then made her walk an hour the rest of the way. Rodriguez is currently in jail on a $350,000 bond. He's scheduled to appear in court March 23rd.
All right, so that was the Raw local news station coverage, WGNTV.com. But they have more in the write-up, right? So we are in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I remember his name is Alexander Rodriguez, 34-year-old. And so he appeared in the Hamilton County Criminal Court on Thursday, and he pled guilty to the aggravated statutory rape and was sentenced to 4 years in prison. But the sentence was suspended, and Hamilton will undergo supervised sex offender probation for 10 years and wear a GPS ankle monitor, which is the news that came to WTVC, their local station. So it's this is a dance back to March 2015, where the 15-year-old student at the Sail Creek High School was reported missing after last seen getting on the bus that he drove. All right, and then so we got all those details, right? And but during the investigation, police asked Rodriguez about the motel, and he immediately asked for an attorney. All right, now after the hearing on Thursday, Rodriguez's attorney told the Times Free Press that the victim had credibility issues, saying the victim claimed the oral sex was forced, but the evidence didn't really bear that out. How do you... What? There's a level of... And this is why people don't like lawyers. All right? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. Like, this Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence thing is fucking bullshit. All right? Quote... so there may have been some overall credibility issues with her, end quote, from attorney Johnny Houston, is what he told the newspaper. Like, get the fuck... So, all right. So that's what's going down. What evidence? You know what? I don't even want to sit there and try to imagine what the fuck kind of fucking evidence... Just shoot him in the fucking face. Shoot the lawyer. Shoot the fucking guy in the fucking face. Just get rid of these motherfuckers. A lot of people need to be euthanized to actually get justice on this planet. That's something people don't deal with. You know, like, peace my ass. You cannot have peace with these fucking monsters and this fucked up culture that they fucking gleefully built. Which is the only thing they built. It's ideology, culture, bumper sticker rhetoric, conventional wisdom. It's all they made. They've built nothing. Fuck this shit.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what to say. Mother, mother, can you keep them in the dark for a while? Can you have a proper wedding world? Oh, mother! Father! Gonna take you down the house tonight.
I have more black friends than Father Teresa.
A warning for women in Georgia, if someone secretly takes pictures under your skirt, it is perfectly legal. The state does not have an upskirting law, and due to a technicality, Georgia's Court of Appeals says upskirting doesn't count as invasion of privacy. Dante Renzulli has reaction.
It's a court decision that might have many women in Georgia thinking twice about whether they're going to wear a skirt in public again.
That makes us uncomfortable, you know, to walk around a store and we have to be worried about, like, who's watching us.
I'm going to be moving out of Atlanta in about a week, and that makes me even happier that I'm not going to be around for this.
Due to a technicality, judges recently ruled invasion of privacy in Georgia doesn't include sneaking a photo up a woman's skirt in a public place, like a park or a supermarket.
Well, I think that's kind of crazy. If somebody came up my skirt and tried to take a picture, I would assume they would want to arrest that person.
And the police generally do want to make arrests when they hear about something like this happening. The case the Court of Appeals just heard was in Macon, but we've seen men arrested in Snellville and most recently in a Brookhaven supermarket for doing the exact same thing. It's not clear how those cases will be affected now.
You've just given people license to continue this kind of conduct until the next legislative session, which is not until next year.
I think that's kind of ridiculous, honestly. I think that's terrifying.
The judges said in their 6-3 opinion that it's up to the state lawmakers to fix the wording of this law. State senators like Vincent Ford say they're going to jump on this and make sure it gets corrected. But the soonest opportunity for that is in the spring.
So we're going to have 6 months
or so, where these creeps can run around doing this stuff. Until then, women in Georgia should be extra aware of their surroundings while wearing a skirt or dress in public.
This show is so black that Father Teresa makes me get a tan before I go on this show.
All right, so I grabbed that audio based off of this link that Phoenix Kalita sent me, which, and there is editorializing in this. It's from that website, The Bipartisan Report, which is essentially a Democrat website, you know, and they editorialize the hell out of their stories. And so I went and found that original video with the testimony. Well, I got with the opinion, with the sort of person on the street opinion from the predominantly women of color that they approached. And so, so in the wake of a court case over a store employee who took secret footage of a woman's skirt, the Georgia Court of Appeals has ruled that the man's actions are not against Georgia law. All right, so. The lewd practice of upskirting, the surreptitious videotaping of a person's private parts in a public place, cannot be prosecuted as a crime in Georgia, the state's Court of Appeals has ruled. You see, the court, in its ruling, overturned the earlier lower court ruling that convicted that that the convicted man, the 24-year-old Brandon Lee Gary, with an invasion of privacy. Now, the reasoning behind the ruling asserts that Gary's footage did not actually violate the unnamed victim's privacy since it was taken in a public place. The Journal Constitution claims that similar rulings have been reached by courts across the country. Yes, that is, I think, what was that, Texas and who was those motherfuckers? Where's Boston? But the Massachusetts, those motherfuckers, right? I'm not sure about Arizona. Don't really remember. All right, Judge Elizabeth Branch wrote on behalf of the majority, as reported by the Journal Constitution, it is regrettable that no law currently exists which criminalizes Gary's reprehensible conduct. The remedy for this problem, however, lies with the General Assembly, not this court. All right, so fuck it. We don't feel like working. Women across Georgia spoke to the local news station expressing shock and disgust at the ruling. One woman told the state, so they actually pulled, they pulled quotes from the clip I just played, so that's a fair deal. And they got Tanya Washington, the law professor. She had a proper ass afro, nigga. Her afro was on bang, nigga. So the publication of this ruling has certainly reached persons who would be sickeningly enthralled by the possibility of committing such an act. Not only will the potential perpetrators be empowered, but the victims will be silenced, since based on the court's ruling, authorities have no interest in listening to their stories. Now, one thing that I heard in there, like somebody was like, oh, cops would like to arrest people for this. Let's not forget the cops are rapists. Like, it's gonna be motherfucking cops doing this shit. Let's not forget that there was the deal out, it was reported out of California. Garen goddamn T, it's going on everywhere. Where, cops are, pulling women over, stopping women, and then going through their smartphones. And, like, if the woman has, like, nude or, like bra and undershorts, like pictures of themselves, the cops will send those pictures to themselves, right? Like text message it to himself. Like, get the fuck out. Like, that's what the fuck these people do. Like, so fuck the cops, nigga. The cops are not here to fucking help you, nigga. They're not. Deal with it. Excuse. So Georgia has empowered sexual predators and weakened victims. And, Jesus Christ. Oh, and that's the end of the article. They go to a video clip. Oh, so they actually link the same one I found. Yeah, and again, that's the Bipartisan Report. Like, they're a Democrat website. I don't recommend them. But I need Phoenix Kalita to do the show prep because I'm exhausted and busy. So, I need help. All right. Back to the shit.
If you gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, your orders are always followed. then why would Santiago be in danger? Why would it be necessary to transfer him off the base?
Santiago was a substandard Marine. He was being transferred.
Not what you said. You said he was being transferred because he was in grave danger.
That's correct.
You said he was in danger. I said grave danger. You said, is there any
other... I recall what I said.
I can have the court reporter read back to you.
I know what I said. I don't have to have it read back to me like I'm...
Why the two orders? Colonel?
Sometimes men take matters into their own hands.
Mister, you need to clear this moment ago that your men never take matters in their own hands. Your men follow orders or people die. So Santiago shouldn't have been in any danger at all, should he, Colonel?
Snotty little bastard.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
The court will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant Kendrick gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, then why did he have to be transferred? Colonel, Lieutenant Kendrick ordered the code red, didn't he? Because that's what you told Lieutenant Kendrick to do.
Object!
And when it went bad, you cut these guys loose!
Your Honor,
you have Marcus inside a bony transport!
Your Honor, you doctored the logbook!
Damn it, Captain!
You coerced the doctor!
Consider yourself in contempt!
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did!
Please, the court, I suggest the members be dismissed so that we can move to an immediate Article 39A session. The witness has rights.
Captain Ross. Jack? The members of the court will retire to an anteroom until further instructed.
All rise!
What the hell is this? Colonel, what's going on? I did my job. I do it again. I'm going to get on a plane and go on back to my base.
You're not going anywhere, Colonel. MPs, guard the Colonel.
Yes, sir.
Ben Jealous looks so happy to be on the prime time stage at the Democratic National Convention Monday night. Thrilled to be endorsing Hillary Clinton for president. The NAACP, which Jealous led for 4 years, is a virtual annex of the Democratic Party. But since Jealous was no longer president of the organization, it was safe for him to temporarily join the Sanders camp, and they could all be welcomed back into the bosom of corporate power, personified by Hillary Clinton. You could see the utter joy in Jealous's face, like he was coming in from the cold. One of his next steps was the studios of Democracy Now!, where he flaunted his utter subservience to the Democratic Party in a debate with the Green Party's presumed presidential candidate, Jill Stein. Jealous sneered at the very idea of challenging the Democrats at the presidential level. We cannot afford to end up with having an Iraq war because we narrowly lose the White House, as we did with Bush, said Jealous, repeating the old canard that Ralph Nader threw the 2000 election to the Republicans, and ignoring the fact that Hillary Clinton supported Bush's war in Iraq, and that Clinton and Barack Obama have since set the whole of the Middle East and much of Africa on fire. Jealous said his mission is to keep the madman and neo-fascist Donald Trump out of the White House, to which Jill Stein replied, "Hillary Clinton's finger on the button is as dangerous as Donald Trump, and it's Barack Obama himself who initiated the new nuclear arms race, spending $1 trillion. Ben Jealous could muster no substantive response to Stein on issues of war and peace or on domestic issues either. The black misleadership class is not concerned with policy, but with their own position in the Democratic Party structure, which is their doorway to Wall Street and the ruling class. Jealous shamelessly parroted the insane line that Hillary Clinton is a fierce advocate for women and for children, when, as Jill Stein reminded him, Bill and Hillary Clinton destroyed the Aid to Families with Dependent Children program, welfare as we knew it. Jealous said he was rooted in a black community that's been devastated by mass incarceration, as if Bill and Hillary were not the architects of the biggest surge in black imprisonment in history. Ben Jealous doesn't know what a fascist is and could care less. He only knows that his job is to keep black people inside Hillary Clinton's big corporate tent. He slanders leftists like Jill Stein as giving aid and comfort to Donald Trump, but makes his own career of delivering black people into the clutches of the worst mass murderers and mass incarcerators the Democratic Party has to offer. What is truly anathema to Ben Jealous and his ilk is a reemergence of a black independent politics that would likely be more radical and more socialist than Bernie Sanders or Jill Stein, and would put black misleaders like him out of business. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.
When we're not on the show, Father Teresa yells at me.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Thursday, July 28th, 2016. First up, Big Gay News from Pennsylvania. Democratic Convention makes history with first openly transgender speaker. Gay Star News reports that Sarah McBride will make history this week at the Democratic National Convention when the National Press Secretary of the Human Rights Campaigns Foundation will be the first out transgender speaker at a convention of a major U.S. political party. Chad Griffin, HRC president, made a statement saying that, quote, "Sarah's inclusion in Thursday's program is a significant milestone for our community, and it sends a strong message that transgender people and their voices matter." McBride is a volunteer for the Trans United for Hillary Steering Committee, which supports the Democratic Party's presumptive nominee, Hillary Clinton. Next up, baker who refused gay wedding cake takes his case to the Supreme Court. New Now Next reports that a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple is petitioning the Supreme Court to hear his case, putting GLBT rights back before the highest court in the land. The owner of Denver's Masterpiece Cake Shop, Jack Phillips, had refused to bake a cake for the wedding of Charlie Craig and David Mullins in 2013, and was ordered to do so due to civil rights laws in Colorado that ban discrimination in public accommodation. After the Colorado Supreme Court refused to hear the case, Phillips filed a petition with the United States Supreme Court to hear the case, saying that because he sees himself as an artist more than a baker, he feels that being forced to bake a cake for an event that he is morally against is akin to, quote, "investing some part of my creative soul into communicating an idea that my heart rejects." Next up, judge to monitor Kansas's actions on gay marriage for 3 years. LGBTQ Nation reports that a federal judge told Kansas on Friday that for 3 more years he will monitor its compliance with the U.S. Supreme Court's historic decision legalizing gay marriage across the nation. A permanent injunction banning the state from treating same-sex couples any differently from heterosexual couples and allowing them to get married or in extending, quote, other rights, protections, obligations, or benefits of marriage to them by U.S. District Judge Daniel Crabtree. The judge wrote in his 33-page order that his decision was made because he felt that, while the state did take steps to follow the SCOTUS ruling, it did not fully comply with it, and that conduct, quote, raises doubts about the reliability of Kansas officials to do so. For our last story, trans beauty queen found murdered in Mexico. Gaystar News reports that Paulette Gonzalez's severely burnt remains were found over a month after she went missing. Originally from Puerto Vallarta, Gonzalez won the title of gay beauty queen last year and went missing last month while visiting a friend. Evidence points to Gonzalez having suffered severe injuries before her murder, and her body was then set on fire, which authorities are investigating as a hate crime due to her being transgender. That's it for today. Thanks to Linda Raines for compiling the stories. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
Welcome to a new project. This is a news channel that really is a lot more than news. This is a community where we're going to be able to share ideas and discuss the issues of the day, and we're going to find solutions. Are you tired of the media filters? Well, I am. I always have been. So we're going to do something about
it. I don't know Geneva Reed Veal, Sabrina Fulton, Lucia McBath, Maria Hamilton, or Gwen Carr. What I do know about them is that they are the mothers of Sandra Bland, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Dontre Hamilton, and Jordan Davis, four of whom were murdered by police and the other by a homicidal right-wing nutcase. I know they're all members of a club they did not volunteer for, one that nobody wants to belong to, and that they deserve our respect, our profound sympathy, and our support. I also know they're letting themselves be called the mothers of the movement, and they're campaigning for Hillary Clinton. I know they were trotted in front of the Democratic convention Tuesday night, where one of them announced that Hillary Clinton was going to lead us into an era of restorative justice. There's plenty more I do not know. I don't know if the mothers are aware that Hillary Clinton justified and campaigned for the end of welfare in the 1990s, throwing families into deeper poverty and turning millions of poor mothers out into the low-wage workforce without child care. I don't know if they're familiar with the Clinton crime bills of 94, 95, and 96, which financed and fueled the expansion of the mass incarceration state and took Pell Grants for college educations away from people in prison. I don't know if they know that Hillary, to whom they claim a mother-to-mother bond, helped close the courthouse doors to lawsuits against prison conditions and to the efforts of the convicted to prove their innocence. She also helped incentivize states to lengthen their already unjust and draconian prison sentences and to expand the federal death penalty from 4 to more than 60 offenses. I have no way of knowing whether these ladies actually thought up that Mothers of the Movement title. It sounds like it might have come from the sharp tongue of some mouthpiece of the black political class, that gaggle of black politicians, preachers, and business types which has tied itself hand and foot to the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. This black political class relentlessly celebrates and commemorates the freedom movement of 50 years ago to create their signature brand, which is the impression that they had something to do with it, and they're always on the lookout for opportunities to appear relevant to the current movement. Capturing and cynically using some of the mothers of those murdered by police is exactly the kind of move we'd expect from the operatives of our black political class. They are old hands at the game of power politics, and these mothers are newbies. Geneva Reed Veal, Sabrina Fulton, Lucia McBath, Maria Hamilton, and Gwen Carr are certainly the mothers of martyrs, but let's not get it twisted. This movement has thousands of martyrs, and tens of millions of mothers, from maroons and runaway slaves whose names we'll never know, to the Harriet Tubmans and the Ida B. Wellses, to the organized teachers, nurses, and home health care workers, to the many thousands of women in the streets today. And it's safe to say that most of this movement's mothers are not campaigning for Hillary Clinton. For Black Agenda Report, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
The Bernie for President campaign is over, but the political revolution that he launched against corporate rule is just beginning. Sanders and close advisors are now strategizing and developing a new organizational structure to keep growing the grassroots rebellion. But a multitude of Bernie supporters are not waiting on a smoke signal from headquarters. Their percolate-up creativity has already burst into new political organizing projects that are advancing this energized populist movement. One such effort got underway just 3 days after the final Democratic primary. Some 3,000 Bernie-crats from across America gathered in Chicago for the People's Summit. Rather than being morose or cynical about Sanders not winning the nomination, attendees were exuberant about the movement that he galvanized. This extraordinary event was a combination of tent revival and a big workshop for strategizing, organizing, and mobilizing. This two-day summit was convened by National Nurses United and co-sponsored by more than 50 diverse and effective democracy-building groups. This meeting had a minimum of the usual blah-blah and a maximum of planning on how to put experienced, local-based organizers and volunteers directly into growing the movement, starting now. These ever larger and broader local coalitions will, 1, be rooted in principled anti-corporate policies, 2, launch direct grassroots initiatives and actions on a range of populist issues, 3, recruit, train, and elect thousands of movement candidates to school boards, city councils, state legislatures, and other offices, 4, deepen the relationships and sense of shared purpose in this revolutionary democratic movement, and 5, make it fun, putting the party back in politics. This is Jim Hightower saying, for more information, go to thepeoplesummit.org, thepeoplesummit.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, what's going on, gang? So I really do want to, I cannot wait until we can get our shit in gear and get a ground internet service. It's just that shit is, you know, it's fucking pricey. It cost an ass load to move in here. It's been costing an ass load to finish up moving in here, you know, and then we're about to pay our first month's rent, you know, and then Phoenix Kalita has bills due. Like, Phoenix Kalita pays her car insurance in 6 month installments, so that's a big bill. Excuse me. You know, I mean, we definitely got some help from folks in the PayPal. We actually wouldn't even have been able to do this shit without the folks in the PayPal. Without the folks in the PayPal, a bunch of this shit would still be in the storage locker and we'd be eating top ramen. Right? Like, shit got real. You know, so there is an installation fee and whatnot for the internet service. So we'll see what happens after the first, you know, like, she's gonna get paid, I'm gonna get paid, you know, go over the bills and whatnot and see if we can afford to get the internet service installed so we can broadcast again. But until then, it's these pre-recorded programs, which, and they are well produced, you know, because I get to sit down and take my time, but we don't get to interact with the chat room. You know, we don't get to, you know, have, you know, if Fallon Matthew wants to call in and shoot the shit, you know, if Lisa wants to get on the line and shoot the shit, you know, Ricky Loco, Americans United again, Rashani Loco, a single simulcast might want to jump on the joint. You know, the pre-recorded joints are essentially me at this table talking and splicing, you know, talk and cut and splice and edit, you know, and then upload it and hope it's interesting. That's why I don't do it as a monologue. I cut up all these clips together and music and whatnot and just try to make it, you know, a good bowl of soup, you know. And so for this one, we're not going to close out having fun with Alex Jones or anything. We're going to close out with Mumia Abu-Jamal. He kind of surprised Democracy Now! And called into their live program with Amy Goodman and her co-host. All right, so we're going to close out with that. It's about an 11-minute clip. And that'll be this episode. And then we'll get back as soon as we can with more Wine Cellar. But we are going into my new version of a work week, which is fucking Friday through Monday. That's my work week now. My weekend is Tuesday through Thursday. So I am recording this on the last evening of my weekend. All right, so let's hop into that and wrap this thing up, and I'll be on the end of my 30-day ban in the social networks. That'll be over, and I can use that platform again. And I mostly want to use that platform to fucking invite people to another fucking platform because I get banned way too much, way too easy. All right, catch you around.
As we turn now to a surprise guest who has just called in to Democracy Now! Juan?
We are joined by Mumia Abu-Jamal, a former colleague of mine here in Philadelphia. We were both journalists together here in the 1970s, perhaps the most well-known political prisoner in the United States, award-winning journalist who's writing from his prison cell, has reached a worldwide audience through his prison radio commentaries and many books. Abu-Jamal was convicted of the 1981 murder of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner, but has always maintained his innocence. Amnesty International has found he was deprived of a fair trial. Mumia Abu-Jamal joins us now on the phone from SCI Mahoney State Prison in Frackville, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Mumia.
Hola, hola, Juan, everyone, Larry, everyone, on the moon.
We're interested in your thoughts on the convention occurring right here in your hometown.
It's a hell of a show, but it is a show. And, you know, I mean, it has writers and directors and stage managers, and it's a hell of a show. But never forget, it's just a show.
What do you think of not only what's happening on the inside? I mean, we just broadcast today.
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Mahanoy.
That's the recording that comes on over the call. So very quickly, Mumia, there's not only action on the floor of the Democratic Convention, but thousands of people have been marching in the streets.
I think that's extraordinary, and I think that's where the real action is. While I said the convention is a show, and who can doubt that, what's happening in the streets of Philadelphia, that's where the real story is, because those are the voices you won't hear throughout these 4 days of gala, extravaganza, lies, and illusion, because you're hearing the pain of the people. The real concerns of the people, and really the desperation of the people to be heard by the rich and the powerful. You look inside, you'll see the powerful. You'll see millionaires, right? We have an incredible system right now. Millionaires running against billionaires. Well, who's not in that picture? And that's the 99%, the rest of us, you know.
Mumia, I'm sure you also monitored the Republican convention that occurred last week and Donald Trump emphasizing that he is the law and order candidate. And I'm sure that it reminded you of a person that we were familiar with right here in Philadelphia, the mayor of Philadelphia, Frank Rizzo, who was the ultimate law and order candidate. Any similarities between some of the stuff that you remember from him and Donald Trump?
Rizzo was authentically working class. You know, he rose from the bottom of the police department to become its commissioner and then was elected mayor. And, you know, I thought about Frank Rizzo when I first heard that Donald Trump was running. And I had the same reaction when I heard that Frank Rizzo was running for mayor. I laughed. I'm like, here was a guy, high school dropout, nothing personal, but it's true. And here's a guy who is like dumb as rocks about everything other than making money, or taking money, I should say, you know, I stopped laughing. You know, I thought about when Ronald Reagan ran for president, this grade B actor. I laughed. I stopped laughing. And when you look at this guy, he's like Frank Rizzo with billions and billions of dollars in his pocket. But if you kind of turned off the screen and listened to the words, it's the same message. Fear, 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 fear of the other, fear of blacks, and only I can save you. It's kind of a mixture of Frank Rizzo, Goldwater, Spiro Agnew, Dick Cheney, you know, and Hitler.
Mumia, you recently did a commentary on the killings of police officers in Baton Rouge and Dallas. Share your thoughts on this.
Well, I think one of the lines I used in that commentary is, why should any of us be surprised? Whenever that happens, what you'll hear, especially among elite opinion on TV, is that this was a madman. This was a crazy person. If he was mad, how did he get accepted into the Army? How did he serve tours in Afghanistan or Iraq? Both of these men displayed military training that they acquired from the U.S. government, and as they became killers in the Third World. When they came back to the United States and they saw their reality, do you think that drove them crazy? Something like 22 veterans commit suicide every day in America. And that's because of the horrible things they've been asked to do by empire abroad. And, you know, when you look at the condition of black people in America, mass incarceration gone crazy, ghettos being policed as if it is Fallujah or a foreign nation, why would you be surprised? They were trained by the state to do exactly what they did, and they did it.
Mumia, we are speaking to you from Hanoi State Prison. You used to be on death row for 2 decades. I think ultimately, perhaps, it was enormous international pressure that led to you being taken off of death row. How is your health now? For a period of time, we didn't know what was happening, diabetes, eczema. How are you being dealt with? How is health care there? What are you asking for?
Well, for a while there, I didn't know what was happening. I had diabetes. I had extreme high blood pressure. My skin was falling to my feet. I was itching in an insane degree. What we learned through this litigation is that I had hepatitis C that to this date has not been treated. I've probably been given more treatment for my symptoms, right, than perhaps any other prisoner in Pennsylvania. That's true. But I've yet to be treated for that disease. And the state, in their latest brief to the court, said if the plaintiff prevails, it'll cost the DOC over $600 million. I can't make this up. It's probably online. That's only because they claim there are some 6,000 men and probably women in the Pennsylvania system who have hepatitis C, and very few of them are treated. On the stand, we asked him, the head of the DOC's medical division, Dr. Noel, how many people are being treated with these new antiviral medications? And he said, I don't know. He said, well, can you give us your best guess? He said, five or six. Five or six out of 6,000. What we also learned is they have a protocol. It was a secret protocol that we learned about at that hearing, that men and women who have hepatitis C must wait until something called esophageal varices are detected. That's when you're bleeding from your esophagus out of your mouth, which means, of course, that your liver is, for all intents and purposes, dead. That's why you're bleeding out of your mouth, because you can't process, your liver can't process your blood. It's rejecting it. That's when you'll be considered to be put on a list for treatment. That's stage 4,
Danny,
liver disease.
Any comments you want to share with Mumia Abu-Jamal?
Well, first of all, I was just thinking about his health, and essentially, and I think for us to be practical, they're trying to kill him right there before our eyes. Certainly, his analysis of what has happened and what is happening here is right on point. I was at an event at a church on Broad Street where men and women were there, particularly women were there, and certainly it was for them and their voices of women. One of the women who was there, father had been a political prisoner for 42 years. So that's the place where everything is happening. Code Pink had a sign saying feminism, not militarism. They were promoting that. That's where the real convention is. There were the people who are still fighting, who want their voices to be heard. And our responsibility, the work that Larry does and the work that we have to do as progressives, is about that. I was just thinking also about what W.B. Du Bois wrote in his 1953 reissue of The Souls on Black Folks after 50 years, when he talked about how his thinking at that time was that the question of the century was race. The question of the century, said, is still race. But what he didn't know then is that how people would be able to manage to live and to go on with their lives, in the midst of all the pain, in the midst of all the wars. That's the thing that we have to consume ourselves with in terms of whether it's the war in our cities or the war abroad or the destabilization of governments, et cetera, et cetera.
Mumia Abu-Jamal, I know we just have 15 seconds. Do you believe the issue of the 21st century, the problem of the 21st century, is still the color line?
I think it's the color line, but it's also the class line. We've just experienced a black president, but black Americans, in the words of Young Jeezy, for the most part, are still living in hell.
You have 1 minute.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Your last 20 seconds that we have for this broadcast.
I would urge anyone who has a computer or a way to acquire The Nation of February 10th, 2016, the article by Michelle Alexander entitled Why Hillary Clinton Doesn't Deserve the Black Vote. It is incredible. I thank you all. I love you all. Larry, pleasure hearing you again, brother. Everybody, I love you. Thank you for this time with you. On the move.
Thank you very much. Imprisoned former Black Panther Mumia Abu-Jamal speaking to us from prison in Frackville, Pennsylvania. I am Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Danny Glover and Larry Hamm. And-